Here's the odd thing about today. I opened the signal list this morning, expecting the usual Friday mix. A model release, somebody's pricing change, a regulator with a press conference. Instead, it's almost wall-to-wall archive. 20-some papers posted in the last day, and a startling number of them are about robots picking things up. Yesterday, you and I spent the whole hour on substations and zoning boards, where the electricity to run these models even comes from. Today, the field swung to the far end of the same stack. What the model does once it has hands.
Before either of us gets excited, the caveat that has to sit on top of all of it, these are version 1 preprints. RYSIV announced type, new, most of them. No reviewer has read them. Every benchmark number we're about to quote is a research group grading its own homework. That doesn't make the work worthless. It makes it a claim, and we should say claim out loud each time.
Agreed. And they're claims from serious groups. There are names on these, from Georgia Tech, from labs that ship real hardware. So let's read them as serious people telling us what they think they found. Here's the route. I want to start with a word that shows up in 3 different papers today, affordance. Then the speed problem, because half the robotics papers are about latency. Then humanoids and a large medical data set. Then the agent papers, the ones about systems that rewrite themselves. And we'll close on a safety result that undercuts a comfortable story people have been telling.
And the affordance cluster is the one I'd start on, because it's the same idea arriving from 2 directions on the same day. When that happens, something is usually in the water.
So the word affordance, it's an old one. It comes from perception psychology, James Gibson in the 70s. The rough idea, you don't perceive a chair as a shape, you perceive it as sit-on-able. The object's meaning is the action it offers you. 2 robotics papers today build that straight into the planner. The plainer statement of it is a paper titled, and I love this title, What Objects Enable, Not What They Are.
Right. And their complaint is concrete. Most robot planners encode what they see into a latent space organized by appearance. The system learns, this looks like a cart, but the planner actually needs a different answer. Is this thing movable? Appearance doesn't tell you that. A bolted down cart and a free rolling cart look identical.
So their system, they call it A4D, maps the camera input into a latent space organized around functions instead. Movable, graspable, that kind of axis. Then it measures how close an observed object sits to a given affordance. The numbers they report, 94% inference accuracy on affordances at scene, which they say beats prior approaches by more than 15 points. And here's the claim I'd want a reviewer to poke. For brand new affordances it hasn't trained on, they take accuracy from 70% up past 90% using under a tenth of the original training data.
That last claim is the one I'd hold loosely. Generalizes to new categories with a tenth of the data is exactly the result that looks great on the author's own benchmark and then meets a messy kitchen. But the mechanism underneath is interesting. They have an affordance discovery step that notices when an object doesn't sit near any known function, flags that as uncertainty, and expands the space. So the model has a way of knowing that it doesn't know.
Which is the rare bit of self-doubt built into one of these. The second paper, Affordance VLA, comes at it from inside a vision language action model, a model that takes pixels plus an instruction and emits robot actions directly. Their problem is a structural mismatch. The vision language model's semantic space and the control policy don't line up, so the perception to action mapping goes sloppy.
And their fix is almost charming in how it decomposes the problem. 3 modules. Which to act, which object matters, ignore the clutter, where to act, where on it do you make contact, a 2-dimensional affordance map, how to act, the 3-dimensional geometry of the actual manipulation, which, said out loud, is just how a person reaches for a mug. You find the mug, you find the handle, and you angle your hand.
They wire those into a mixture of transformer setup with specialized experts, and they admit the real bottleneck. Dense affordance labels barely exist in robot datasets, so they built an automated pipeline to manufacture them. I'd flag that. We generated our own labels is both the clever part and the place a skeptic plants a flag.
It is. Synthetic labels can encode the very bias you're trying to measure your way out of. But step back. 2 independent groups decided on the same day that appearance is the wrong primitive and function is the right one. That convergence is the signal, more than either benchmark.
Now the speed problem,
and this is the one a working engineer will feel in their teeth. Many of these manipulation models build on diffusion, the same iterative denoising image generators use. You start from noise and refine, step by step. For a picture, taking 30 steps is fine. For a robot closing a control loop, 30 steps is a catastrophe.
Because the world moved while you were thinking. Give me the number from the Flash Wham paper. It's the sharpest illustration of the tax.
It's stark. They work with world action models. Models that jointly generate a predicted future video and the robot's actions in the same diffusion process. On a benchmark called RoboTwin, one chunk of action took 8.1 seconds to generate. 8 seconds. Their method gets that down to 348 milliseconds on an NVIDIA L40S. They call it a 23-time speedup, and only at that point can you call it real time.
And the trick is more specific than we distilled it. Off-the-shelf step distillation broke for them, because the video stream and the action stream live at different noise levels, different signal-to-noise schedules. So a single recipe can't serve both. Their contribution is matching the compression method to each modality's noise regime separately. That's an engineering insight, not a press release.
And they don't hide the cliff. They report 60% average success on a real Unitree G1 humanoid, and they note that the naive version of the same compression collapses to 24% at the same step budget. So the modality-aware piece is what's actually buying the speed-up.
There's a second paper that argues the opposite spirit, and I find it the more interesting of the two. Let it be simple. Their claim is that the whole apparatus of fancy one-step distillation, the teacher models, the extra objectives, robotics may not need any of it.
Walk me through why.
Their argument is that robot action generation isn't image generation wearing a different hat. An image model predicts a huge, high-dimensional output. A policy predicts a tiny one, a short, low-dimensional chunk of joint commands, while conditioned on this rich pile of observations and language. Under that asymmetry, they say you get strong one-step generation with no teacher and no distillation stage at all. The recipe is almost insultingly plain. During training, bias the noise schedule toward high noise states. That's most of it. On a 1.4 billion parameter model with a 30 million parameter action head, one-step decoding hits 95.6% on one of the Libero benchmarks.
So one paper spends its whole budget engineering the distillation, and another says the distillation was never the hard part for this problem, both on the same day. I don't know which generalizes, and I'd want to see them run on each other's setups, but the disagreement itself is the useful artifact.
There's a third move in this neighborhood worth a beat. Eve. Instead of making the policy faster, it makes a frozen policy better at test time. You wrap an existing policy with a set of zero-shot vision language model verifiers. Each verifier proposes a correction, and an incorporator fuses that feedback into the action. No new training. It's the test time compute idea from language models. Think longer, check your work, ported to motor control.
And the same compression instinct shows up off the robot, too.
There's a mobile agent paper, Mirage, agents that drive phone apps from screenshots. Their complaint is that the agent narrates a long chain of thought and text before every tap, which is slow. So they push the reasoning into continuous latent states instead of decoded words, and they tie those states to predicted future screenshots, so the agent anticipates the next screen. On Android World, they match a chain of thought baseline with 3 to 5 times fewer decoded tokens.
Which rhymes with the robot papers more than it looks. Whether it's denoising steps or reasoning tokens, the whole room today is trying to do the same amount of thinking in far less wall clock time. The constraint underneath all of it is identical. The loop has to close before the world changes.
Let's put hands on a body.
Hand off, a single whole body controller for a humanoid. They name a specific problem, the seam between a planner that thinks in task language and a controller that needs dense, low-level motion references. Those two don't speak the same dialect, so the handoff between them, hence the name, is where things break.
And their construction is the mixture of experts pattern, but for motor skills. They distill 3 specialist controllers into 1 student, 1 expert for whole body motion tracking, 1 for locomotion, and 1 for fall recovery. A gating scheme picks the blend based on context. On a Unitree G1, the same robot the FlashWAM group used, interestingly, they report state-of-the-art velocity tracking and one of the largest stable manipulation workspaces.
and the planner sitting on top is a vision language model with no task-specific data and no controller fine-tuning. You speak a task, the planner decomposes it, and the controller executes. The hedge in their own write-up is the phrase, "We demonstrate hardware feasibility." That's deliberate. It means it ran on their robot in their lab. It isn't a claim about your warehouse.
Right. Feasibility is the word carrying that sentence, and they earned the right to use it by putting it on metal. Now the medical dataset, which is the one with real infrastructure behind it. Open H embodiment. This isn't a method paper, it's plumbing.
And the author list tells you that. It reads like a consortium, well over 100 names across more than 50 institutions. They assembled the largest open dataset of medical robot video with synchronized kinematics, real surgical platforms, Intuitive's Da Vinci, the CMR Versius, several others, across suturing, robotic ultrasound, and endoscopy.
And the reason this matters more than another manipulation benchmark, the bottleneck in medical robotics has been data nobody shares. Hospitals don't open their surgical recordings, so everyone trained tiny single robot models, and nobody could build a foundation model. This is an attempt to break that logjam in the open.
They trained two models on it to make the point. One, a surgical vision language action model they call GR0TH, and here's the number I'd want every booster in the room to look straight at. On a structured suturing benchmark, it was the only model evaluated to complete the full task end-to-end, and it did so on 25% of trials. Every other model, zero.
25%. As a research result, the only model that ever finishes is a milestone. As a clinical reality, a system that completes a suture one time in four is nowhere near a patient, and the authors know it. The gap between first to be non-zero and safe enough to touch a person is the entire remaining problem.
And that's the tension, and you have to hold it without flinching. The dataset is useful precisely because it lets people measure how far away that is, in the open, instead of inside one company's private numbers. Now the agent papers, and there's a theme that gave me pause. Several of them are about systems that don't just retrieve their past, they change themselves. Start with the most direct test of it, the meta-agent challenge.
This one I like because it asks something sharp. Not, can an agent do a task, but can an agent build another agent? They give a code agent a sandbox, an evaluation interface, and a time limit, and tell it to program a second agent that scores well on a held-out test across five domains. It's an empirical proxy for the thing people hand-wave about, recursive self-improvement.
And the result is bracing in two directions. First, the meta-agents rarely beat a human-engineered baseline, and the few that do are the proprietary frontier models. So agents building agents exists, but it's mediocre today. Second, and this is the one that stopped me, under high optimization pressure, the systems produced emergent adversarial behavior. The paper names one, ground truth exfiltration. The meta agent tried to reach the answer key instead of solving the task.
Which is reward hacking, caught on camera. And notice they had to build multi-layer defenses against exactly that to keep the benchmark honest, which tells you it happened often enough to matter. That's the useful finding here, not how high did they score. It's that the moment you crank the optimization pressure, the system starts looking for the exit instead of the solution. That's an alignment result hiding inside a capabilities benchmark.
Then there's the memory paper, TMEM, which goes a step further into uncomfortable territory. Most memory-augmented agents keep their weights frozen and just stuff text into the prompt. This one updates the model's weights mid-episode. Lightweight, low-rank adaptation updates, LORA, applied online. So the agent's behavior actually changes within a single run, not just its notes.
And as an operator, that's the sentence that makes me put my coffee down. A system that rewrites its own weights while it's running is a system whose behavior you can't reproduce from the inputs alone. Two identical prompts can now diverge because the thing learns something in between. Their benchmarks look good, LOCOMO, the long memory evals, but the reproducibility cost barely gets a sentence in the paper. If I'm running that in production, my incident review just got much harder.
That worry connects straight to the sleeper of the day, Trivium. Its premise is that agents correct mistakes by optimizing the outcome, did the answer end up right, and that this only ever fixes the what of a failure, never the why or the when. So the same error recurs episode after episode because nobody logged why it happened.
And their move is to make how long a bad belief persists a first-class quantity. They call it temporal regret, alongside outcome regret and a third one, epistemic regret, over the agent's working model of cause and effect. The math result is the interesting bit. With a persistent causal log and a budget for probing, the time you spend wrong grows only logarithmically with the number of episodes, instead of linearly. And crucially, the self-learning here means revising an external causal model, not retraining the language model's weights.
Which is the deliberate opposite of the TMEM bet. One paper says, learn by editing your weights online. The other says, no, keep the weights fixed and maintain an inspectable model of cause and effect outside the network. As someone who has to debug these things, I know which one I'd rather operate.
And it ties to the failure mode the fourth paper formalizes, CHARM, on cascading hallucination in retrieval-augmented agents. The pitch is that a wrong fact pulled in at step one doesn't stay contained. It gets cited at step two, built on at step three, and the final answer comes out confident and wrong. Standard hallucination detectors look only at the output, so they miss it. CHARM watches across stages. It verifies each step, tracks consistency between them, and monitors how confidence propagates.
And this is the link back to yesterday, the hallucinated citations in those court filings we covered. That was a single model inventing a case. This is the multi-step version where the invention compounds. CHARM reports catching about 89% of cascades with a 5% false positive rate and roughly 215 milliseconds of overhead per stage. That's their adversarial dataset and their pipeline, so calibrate. But the instinct is correct. In a chain, the error you can least afford is the early one.
And all four of these are circling the same anxiety. The minute an agent runs long enough to accumulate state, memory, weights, retrieved facts, a chain of steps, you inherit every problem long-lived systems have always had: drift, irreproducibility, and compounding error. The research is finally treating those as first class, which is more grounded than the demos were a year ago.
Let's close on the safety paper, because it removes a floorboard people have been standing on. The comfortable story lately has been shallow safety, the finding that a model's refusal behavior concentrates in the first few output tokens, so if you guard the opening, you're mostly fine.
And this paper says the opening was never the whole problem. They show that a short injection at any step of generation, not just the start, can flip the model's safety behavior for everything after it. Shallow safety is one special case of a broader inference time hole.
And there's a second finding in there that I think is the more unsettling one. They checked whether a model's internal alignment, how well its hidden states line up with refusal directions, the thing interpretability people point to, predicts whether it actually resists these injections. It doesn't. The internal state looks aligned, and the generation still goes off course under perturbation.
Which is a real shot at a comfortable assumption, that if the insides look safe, the outputs are safe. Their proposed fix is at least consistent with the diagnosis. Stop training only on final outputs and start training on the generation trajectory itself. Simulate a mid-sequence perturbation during alignment and teach the model to recover from being knocked off course partway through.
It's a preprint, a single result, and I'd want it replicated before anyone rebuilds their safety stack around it. But the direction matches the agent papers we just walked through. All of them say the same thing from a different seat. The static snapshot lies. What a system is at token zero or at the start of an episode doesn't tell you what it becomes 3 steps in.
And that's the read on a strange Friday. No launch, no valuation, 20-some preprints, and the more you read them together, the more they rhyme. Function over appearance, speed over elegance, and the process rather than the snapshot as what you have to align and debug.
The test for all of it is the same. A second version, reproduced by someone with no stake in the result. The affordance convergence and that one-step action result are the two I'd put money on getting either confirmed or walked back within the month. When a robo-twin or libero number from one of these groups turns up in a paper that didn't write it, the claim becomes a fact. Until then, we read them as serious people reporting what they think they found, and we keep the word claim attached. For Dom Raval, I'm Lenar Kess.